Advaitam Achutam. Infallible. Advaitam Achutam Anadim. Original. Without a beginning. Anadim. Ananta Rupam. His form is unlimited. How can you have unlimited form? This is people argue all the time. When I went to I was with Rasaraj. We went out on book distribution a few years ago on a Berkeley campus. And there was he was showing one of the books, and a Muslim gentleman came along, and he objected strongly that God can't have a form, otherwise how is he unlimited? So we're saying God has an unlimited form, ananta rupam. How's that how's that possible? Can anybody explain how he has an unlimited form?
Ask Arjuna.
Because?
He saw it.
What did he see?
Although he was in one place, he saw the universal form of the Lord, and he saw all the forms of the Lord, and how he's in this material manifestation, and also...
Microphone.
Also. So it's inconceivable. But if one is given the eyes to see by the Lord, then one can see it like Arjuna did. And also all of it's mentioned, and I'm just reading the 11th chapter, that's why. The purport Prabhupada mentions how not only did Arjuna see it, but all of the bhaktas and all of the demigods and all of those that were intimate friends of Krishna were also blessed to see the universal form of the Lord.
So he expanded his form everywhere, but he still had form. There were unlimited eyes. He was in one place at the same time, but expanded everywhere. Also in Vrindavan Leela, there's a pastime in which Mother Yashoda is taking care of Krishna, feeding him her breast milk. And then there's special milk that they were making for him that was boiling over on the stove. And so she put him down to go take care of the milk, leaving one service to go do another service. Sometimes there's a dilemma. And so first you have to do one thing and then you have to do the other. So Mother Yashoda put down Krishna and she went to attend to the milk which was boiling over. You know how that is. When you hear milk boiling over, you just drop whatever's there and you run. Oh no! And this was very special milk too, because out of all the tens of thousands of cows that Nanda Maharaj had, they picked out the very best cows, and then they got the best grasses from all over Vrindavan, and they fed them to those cows, just so that they would have perfect milk for Krishna. So anyway, she put that down, and then Krishna became angry, and what did he do? He smashed a butter pot out of anger that his mother had put him down. So he broke the pot. And then?
And then he ate the butter and disappeared to the monkeys.
Yeah. And then he went away to a secluded place with false tears in his eyes. And he was there hiding out. The Lord, he likes this. Anybody here like to break stuff? If you do, you've probably got that propensity from Krishna, because he likes to break things too. Even Nimai Pandit, after his father passed away, he was staying with his mother, who was taking care of him. And one day he asked for a garland and some oil to go and worship the Ganga. And she said, "Well, just a minute, I'll have to go and get it." And when he heard those words, "I have to go and get it," he flew into a rage. And he went into the house and he began breaking all the pots. All the pots of Ganga water, all the pots of oil, all the pots of flour. And then he took after all the sacks of rice, everything that was in the house, he broke it. And then he went after the walls, the windows. Then he came outside and he started beating on a tree, then beating on the ground. And then he fell asleep on the ground. And Sachimata, of course, was horrified that he had broken everything in the house. So then later when she came and woke him up, and she said, "Here's a garland, you can go and worship the Ganga." So he went and worshipped the Ganga, and he came back, and there was silence in the house for some time. Everything was broken. And she said, "So now I hope that whatever evil spirits are here," she said sort of sarcastically, "they've all gone away because you've broken everything here." And then she commented, she said, "So now tomorrow, how am I going to cook anything for you? There's nothing left in the house. Everything's destroyed." And Nimai Pandit said, "Mother, Krishna takes care of all living entities. He'll take care of us. Why worry?" And so he went away to school, and he came back that afternoon, and he said, "Mother, I have something for you." He called her aside, and he gave her 2 tolas of pure gold. And then she said, "See, Krishna has provided this great treasure for us." He said, "Now go sell this gold, turn it into money. You can have whatever you want. See, I told you Krishna would provide." So she was standing there bewildered. So, I like that pastime. Anyway, Krishna broke the butter pot and then went away. And then what happened? Huh? Fed the monkeys. And then Mother Yashoda came back looking for him and found the broken pot. And then what? Huh? And the footprints. So what did she do? So she went looking for him. So then the chase began because Krishna was running away as fast as he could go. And Mother Yashoda was chasing after him. There was one Brahmin who met up with Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya asked him to recite poetry. And in one of the poems that he wrote, he said, "Some people, they worship the Vedas. Some people worship Mahabharata. Other people, the Upanishads." And he said, "I worship Nanda Maharaj, in whose courtyard the Supreme Absolute Truth is crawling around as like a little baby." So the Supreme Lord, he has form, and sometimes he appears as a baby. So Mother Yashoda chased after him. Finally, she caught him. Although nobody can catch the Supreme Lord, right? We read it right in the Sri Upanishad. No one can run faster than him. Right? Aniyajarikam manaso javiyo naina deva apnuvan purvanarshat tadavato nyanateti tishta tasminapo matarishva dadati. Even the great demigods, they can't approach him. He runs faster than anyone. Although in one place, he can reach out to anywhere. So when Mother Yashoda finally caught up to him, although nobody can catch up to him, he allowed his devotee to catch up to him. And what did she do? Yeah, she tried to tie him up to a grinding mortar so he would, cool down and behave. And so she was successful? It was easy, right? Why? What happened?
Group will be small every time.
By how much?
By
2 inches. Every time she got more rope, she tied it around his waist. And didn't matter how much rope, more and more she got from everywhere she could, more and more rope. And every time she added rope, 2 inches too short, every time. So Krishna's form is unimaginable. Although his form is there, it's not like an ordinary form. Describe Ishvara Paramakrishna Sakchidananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. It's a transcendental form. It's all pervading, but he has form at the same time. And his form is inconceivable. It's not like our form. Asamurdva. He's nobody is greater than or equal to the Lord. And he can't be surpassed in any way. So Mother Yashoda was trying to bind him, but he made it out of his mystic potency that the rope was 2 inches short every time. And then what happened? Finally she succeeded. And so finally she tied him up. So who can bind the Lord except for the Lord's devotee? And there's 2 inches are significant. 1 inch means that we have to put our own endeavor to find Krishna, to do our devotional service. And the second inch means that Krishna has to help us. Otherwise we won't be successful. So that's what those 2 inches mean according to the acharyas. So Krishna's form is unlimited, but He comes to this world and he acts like an ordinary child. But he's full of potencies. Just like when he was a little baby. How old was he, Srivas Pandit Prabhu, when he kicked the cart and broke it to pieces?
3 months.
3 months. So 3 months old, he was just a little baby, and they were having a festival for him. And so Yashoda had put him down right under a cart, and she was tending to some business. And there was one demon called Shakatasura who assumed the form of that cart. And just as little baby Krishna was sitting under the cart, lying under the cart, just 3 months old, he kicked his foot, and it hit the cart, and it smashed it into pieces. And all the pots and pans and all the utensils went flying everywhere. And some of the young cowherds, the boys, had seen it, what had happened. And everyone came over to see what had happened. And they said, no, he kicked it with his foot, and it went flying. But nobody could believe that had happened. But that's his power. Even as a little baby, 3 months old, he has all mystical powers. So his form is unimaginable. Advaitam, achutam, anadim, anantarupam, adyam purana purusham navayovanam cha. So, continuing on page number 8, they are not like our forms, which are fallible. His form is infallible. My form has a beginning, but his form has no beginning. It is ananta. And his form, so many multiforms, has no end. My form is sitting here and not in my apartment. You are sitting there and not in your apartment. But Krishna can be everywhere at one time. He can sit down in Goloka Vrindavan, and at the same time, he is everywhere, all-pervading. He is original, the oldest. But whenever you look at a picture of Krishna, you'll find a young boy, 15 or 20 years old. You'll never find an old man. You have seen pictures of Krishna as a charioteer from the Bhagavad Gita. At that time, he was not less than 100 years old. He had great-grandchildren, but he looked just like a boy. Krishna, God, never becomes old. That is his supreme power. And if you want to search out Krishna by studying the Vedic literature, then you will be baffled. It may be possible, but it is very difficult. But you can very easily learn about him from his devotee. His devotee can deliver him to you. Here he is, take him. That is the potency of Krishna's devotees. Originally, there was only one Veda, and there was no necessity of reading it. People were so intelligent and had such sharp memories that by once hearing from the lips of the spiritual master, they would understand. They would immediately grasp the whole purport. But 5,000 years ago, Vyasadeva put the Vedas into writing for the people in this age, Kali Yuga. He knew that eventually the people would be short-lived, their memories would be very poor, and their intelligence would not be very sharp. Therefore, let me teach this Vedic knowledge in writing. He divided the Vedas into four, Rig, Sama, Atharva, and Yajur. Then he gave the charge of these Vedas to his different disciples. He then thought of the less intelligent class of men, Stri, Shudra, and Dwijabandhu. He considered the women class and Shudra class, worker class, and Dwijabandhu. Dwijabandhu refers to those who are born in a high family, but who are not properly qualified. A man who is born in the family of a Brahmin, but not qualified as a Brahmin, is called Dwijabandhu. For these persons, he compiled Mahabharata, called the History of India, and the 18 Puranas. These are all part of Vedic literature. The Puranas, the Mahabharata, the four Vedas, and the Upanishads. The Upanishads are part of the Vedas. Then Vyasadeva summarized all Vedic knowledge for scholars and philosophers in what is called Vedanta Sutra. This is the last word of the Vedas. Yes, Prabhuji. Microphone. You pass it back to him. Wait.
If one studies Vedas, Prabhupada writes that he is sure to be baffled in his attempts to find Krishna. But the Vedas are word of God, so how does one get baffled by studying Vedas?
Well, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains how the Vedas mostly deal with the three modes of material nature. Because we're born into ignorance, the Vedas have a big project, and that is to engage everyone somehow or other in making progress towards becoming free from the influence of the material world. Tamasi ma jyotirgama, come out of the darkness into the light. So most of the Vedas have rituals for demigod worship. And this demigod worship at a more advanced stage is a misunderstanding, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, that you should water the root of the tree. By trying to water individually the branches, you're making a mistake. Avidipurvakam. But if you, in the Vedas, there are instructions to do certain kinds of indirect worship, and the idea is that when you worship certain demigods, then ultimately you'll get the result. And when you get the result from worshiping, then you get some faith. And then from that faith, you start to get faith in the Vedas and that there's a superior authority. But ultimately, Krishna says, Vedaishcha sarvam ahameva vedyo vedanta krid veda vedeva chaham. He clearly says in the Bhagavad Gita that the purpose of the Vedas is to understand him and come to this position. So if one remains in the ritualistic activities of the Vedas and doesn't understand their purpose, then he simply becomes tangled in the branches and the leaves of the tree of the material world, which Krishna describes in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Urdva mula mada shakam ashvatam prahuravyam chandam siyasya parnani yastan veda savedavit. He describes how this gigantic tree, adashtordvam prasritas tasya shaka guna pravida vishaya pravala, adashtya mulan anusantatani karmani bandinya manushya loke, that there's this gigantic banyan tree with its roots upward and its branches down, and its leaves are the Vedic hymns. So we get lost in this tree, and simply by observing the leaves of the tree or the branches of the twigs and not understanding that we're entangled in the tree and then coming to actually cut down that tree by the strong weapon of detachment, then we become bewildered. So Krishna mentions several things about the Vedas. In the 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita also, he talks about how those who worship the Vedas hoping to reach heavenly planets think that they'll get some better position of life in the material world, which is possible, but then you have to come back down again. Shinye punye martyalokam vishante. You fall back down again from whatever position you attain in the material world. So the Vedas mainly deal with the three modes of material nature. One should rise above those modes, Krishna says, and come to this position of understanding the purpose of the Vedas. Ultimately, that means to render devotional service to Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who's the purpose of the Vedas, who's the compiler of the Vedas, and who's the knower of the Vedas. Yes, Bhurji.
Practically, you can see that...
More, in the mic.
There. Practically, you can see that Vyasadeva did all study all the Vedas if he was not satisfied, and that's why we have all the Bhagavatam came about.
Oh, good point. Can you make it in the microphone so everyone can hear it?
Vyasadeva had compiled, he had divided all the Vedas into four, and then he wrote Mahabharata, and he had done pretty much everything for the all-round welfare of all the people, yet he was not satisfied. And then his spiritual master Narada said that you're missing the point because you haven't directly illuminated the activities for Lord.
Naishkaramyam apyachuta varjitam. Can everyone look up that verse, please, in your verse book? Naishkaramyam apyachuta varjitam. Go ahead, you know it, Srivath? Belt it out.
Okay.
171. As Srivas Prabhu was pointing out, what? Anything I should do? Okay. Shall we read it? Naishkaram yam apyachuta bhava varjitam nashobate gyanam alam niranjanam kutakpunak shashvat abhadramishvare nacharpitam karma yad apyakaranam. Knowledge of self-realization, even though free from all material affinity, does not look well if devoid of a conception of the infallible God. What then is the use of fruitive activities which are naturally painful from the very beginning and transient by nature, if they are not utilized for the devotional service of the Lord. This is the section in which, in the Bhagavatam, as we all remember, that Narada Muni is instructing Vyasadeva, who had become despondent because although he had compiled all the Vedas, he hadn't given the pure essence, which is pure devotional service to God. And therefore he instructs him here that although it's a naishkarm yam, even though it's free, it's talking about self-realization and being freed from the reactions of fruitive work, nashobate gyanam alam niranjanam, if it's devoid of this information about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, nashobate, it's not beautiful, it's not a nice thing. Kutakpuna shashvara bhadram ishvare. So then, of course, the question is, then what's the use of fruitive activities, which are just for mudhas, people who are very foolish, who take to them and don't understand that they're becoming more and more entangled in the material life. Naishkarmam apyachuta varjitam nashobate gyanam alam niranjanam. Nashobate gyanam, it's not beautiful. But hearing the pastimes of the Lord and hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, that's very beautiful. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to listen to Gadadhar Pandit. He would sing the Bhagavatam in very beautiful tunes, and he would listen to him sing that. He listened to the pastimes of Dhruva Maharaj 100 times, and the pastimes of Prahlad Nrisimhadev 100 times. Over and over again he heard it. And sometimes he would hear a verse from the Bhagavatam and go into ecstasy and faint. And then he'd come back to consciousness and ask, say it again. And the devotee would say the verse again and he would faint. And he would come back to consciousness, please say it again. And he would say it and he would faint. Over and over again until someone came and stopped him. Don't say it again. The Bhagavatam's so nice. So that becomes, after compiling all the Vedas and giving all this information, then the Bhagavatam is called the fruit. Nigama kalpa taro galitam palam shuka mukhad amrita drava samyutam pipata bhagavatam rasamaliam mahuraho rasika bhuvi bhavukaha. This is an exclamation by the sages at Naimasaranya about the Bhagavatam and how it's the fruit of all the Vedic tree, of the tree of Vedic literature, with the very fruit of that tree is the Srimad Bhagavatam. Nigama, nigama kalpa taror, galitam palam, it's the fruit. Shukamukad amrita drava samyutam. So it comes from the mouth of Sri Shukadev Goswami. And we know that Shukadev Goswami, he was completely freed from any conception of material life even before he was born. In fact, because of that fact, he didn't want to come out of the womb of his mother and stayed there for 16 years. Even Krishna had to come and convince him. No, he wasn't even convinced. Veda Vyas with his father and said, you won't fall in Maya, you can come out. He wouldn't come out. They kept, we'll bring Krishna. And Krishna came and told him, no, you could come out. You'll be okay. So what happened when he came out of the womb? Then immediately he took off. He didn't want to hang around for any household life at all. He didn't have any affinity for it at all. So he took off. And his father ran after him, crying out, oh, please come back, my son. And he was so pure that although he was walking through an area, there were women bathing. And they saw him come walking through. Now, previously, when Vyasadeva had come through that area, they had all covered themselves, even though he was the empowered incarnation of the Lord. And they thought, well, he's a householder, he makes some designation. So they covered themselves, being embarrassed. But when Shukadeva walked through, they could sense that he was completely uninterested in the material world and didn't even see them, see their material bodies. So they didn't even bother to cover themselves. And Shukadeva went to the forest, completely renounced householder life. He wasn't around very long, a couple seconds, and he left. He didn't even undergo any of the ceremonies, sacred thread ceremony. He went to the forest. And then through oral tradition, there's a story of how his father, Vedavyas, induced him to come back to the so he could teach him the Srimad Bhagavatam. And you know that story? He sent out, some people say it's a woodcutter, some people say it was people hunting birds, but he taught them some of the shlokas from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Aho bhakiyam stanaka lakutam. There's a beautiful verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam. You can look it up. It's a famous verse. Aho bhakiyam stanaka lakutam. Yajig. Now, can you help me out? It's a tongue twister. This is a beautiful verse spoken by Uddhava, and he says, how could one worship anyone more merciful than Krishna? Because when Putana came to kill him by smearing her breast with deadly poison, he didn't see it as an affront. He just took the poison, then he took all her life out, but then he awarded her the position of mother in the spiritual world. So he discounted the fact that she was trying to kill him and said, oh, well, at least she came as my mother, even though it was a sinister idea. And she became completely purified. So he's saying, Krishna is so kind, he's so merciful, he gives shelter to the whole universe, and he takes the best credit of someone and doesn't take the other part and simply gives them the highest thing. How could one take shelter of anyone more merciful than Lord Krishna? It's a very famous verse. In fact, this was the verse that sent Puntarik Vidyaniti into a 7-hour fit of ecstasy. Puntarik Vidyaniti, I know I'm digressing a little bit, but this is a nice story. Puntarik Vidyaniti was one of the greatest devotees of the Lord in Lord Chaitanya's association. And Lord Chaitanya revered him. And he at one time he was calling out for him because he missed him. The Lord misses the association of his devotees, so he began thinking of Puntarik Vidyaniti and calling out his name. Oh, Puntarik, Puntarik. And all the devotees were wondering, who's Puntarik? Maybe it's the name of Krishna. Maybe he's calling for Krishna. Only one person knew, and that was Mukunda, because he had grown up in the same neighborhood, and he knew the exalted character of Puntarik Vidyaniti, this great Vaishnav. So by the power of Lord Chaitanya, Puntarik Vidyaniti, if the Lord calls one, no one can resist. So Puntarik Vidyaniti came to that area by the will of the Lord. And Mukunda, hearing about this, told Gadadhar Pandit, who was a very simple and very renounced devotee from the very beginning of life, he said, would you like to meet a great Vaishnav? And Gadadhar Pandit said, yes, I want to meet a great Vaishnav. Please, please, show me the great Vaishnav. So you come with me, I show you. So they came to Puntarik Vidyaniti's house. He had many, many disciples. And he had many servants and all kinds of followers waiting on him. And he was he was dressed in a very worldly way, very fancy. His hair was oiled with nice hair oil, scented hair oil. And he was sitting on a beautiful bedstead. And he was being served by a servant fanning him with a peacock fan. And he had he had a palanquin that he was carried on with jewels on it. The whole room was bedecked with all the best furniture. His cloth was impeccable. He had the best silk cloth with pearls on it. And he was reclined in a position. He looked like a material enjoyer. And when Mukunda brought Gadadhar Pandit in to see Puntarik Vidyaniti, he looked, Gadadhar did, and he was thinking in his mind, this is a Vaishnav. Because he was from a very renounced family and had been very simple, renounced devotee, very beginning of life. And when he saw Puntarik, he thought, how's this a Vaishnav, a great devotee of the Lord? And understanding Gadadhar's mind, Mukunda recited this verse, Aho bhakiyam stanaka lakutam yajigshayam ya yajangs apyasadvi. This is the verse about Putana and how the Lord is, no one's more, who could be more merciful than Lord Krishna? And when he heard this one verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, from this countenance, he's lying back on the beautiful bedstead, being served, cool drinks everywhere. His entire countenance changed. His face began to change. Tears welled up in his eyes. And then he went into an ecstatic fit of devotion, ecstatic fit, and began thrashing around the room. His servants couldn't hold him down with all their strength. Not one piece of furniture in the whole room was spared. His legs, arms flailing in every direction. The beautiful bedstead broken. All the beautiful pottery around the room smashed. Everything, curtains ripped from the windows. For hours he went on like this, in ecstasy, hearing this one verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, Gadadhar Pandit, seeing that, then he stopped and went into a state of ecstasy without moving for many, many hours, floating in ecstasy of bhakti. So Gadadhar Pandit, after seeing this, he thought, I've made an offense. In my mind, I've offended a great Vaishnav, thinking that he was a materialist. So then he resolved, because he didn't have a spiritual master, resolved, I must take initiation from him to alleviate my offense. So he revealed that to Mukunda, and then they went to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Mukunda told him what had happened, and that Gadadhar Pandit had decided that he wanted to take initiation from Pundarik Vidyanidhi, and Mahaprabhu said, do it immediately, and approved of that. So he became the disciple of Pundarik Vidyanidhi. But all that was from hearing that one verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, Aho Bhakiyam Stanakalakutam. Oh, alas, how could anyone worship anybody else than Krishna, who's so merciful, who's so kind. So that was one of the verses that Vyas had sent out with the woodcutters to go out into the forest. And they would say, they'd learn these verses, and while they were cutting wood, then they'd say these verses out loud. And Shukadev Goswami, who was in a perfect state, indifferent from the material world, not attached to the modes at all. He had risen above the modes. But when he heard these verses from the Srimad Bhagavatam, his mind became attracted. And he thought, I have nothing to do with the material world, but these verses are attracting me. So then he came to find out what it was. You know, where'd you get that verse? He's asking them. They said, oh, we learned it from our teacher. You can come hear it. So he went back, and then Veda Vyas was there. And then he taught him the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, Nigama Kalpataror Galitam Palam Shukamukharam Ritta Drava Samyutam. Shukadev Goswami had heard that from Veda Vyas. And now, just like a parrot, when he bites on a mango, it actually makes the mango sweeter because it ripens the mango faster. And that mango has been touched by the beak of the parrot. It becomes very sweet. And so the Bhagavatam is described like that because Shuka, he's repeated the Bhagavatam like a parrot might repeat, but not just like a parrot. He's made it even sweeter from the mouth of Shukadev Goswami. Pibata Bhagavatam Rasamalayam. Rasam, it means it's the very juice, the essence. Rasamalayam. How does it? Nigama Kalpataror Galitam Balam Shukamukad, from the mouth of Shukadev Goswami. Shukamukad Amrita. It's Amrita. If you hear the Bhagavatam, then you become free from all the birth, death, old age, and disease. Bhava Rog, it's all cured. And your heart becomes completely pure. Pibata Bhagavatam Rasam Alayam. It's the very essence of the taste. Pibata Bhagavatam Rasam Alayam. Mahur aho rusika bhuvi bhavukaha. And what is that? The meanings?
Therefore, this fruit has become even more tasteful, although its nectarian juice was already relishable for all, including liberated souls.
And then give me the word for word, because there's some nice stuff.
Mahu is always aho, yeah. Rasika, those who are full of knowledge of mellows, bhuvi on earth, and bhavukaha, expert in thought.
Okay. Yeah. What's that? Yeah, more. Is there more?
Nigama. Yeah. Right from the word go.
Yeah.
switch to Kolkata, reside in Galitnathpuram, mature Kalam, to Shuka Ashina Sukhdev Goswami, the original speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam, Kukha from the lips, Amrita Nectar, Drava Semi Solid.
There it is. Drava Samyutam. Yeah, and then?
Semi solid and soft and therefore easily swallowable. Samyutam, perfect in all respects. Kibata, due relation. Bhagavatam, the book dealing in the science of eternal relationship with God.
So it's like nectar. It's semi-solid and easily digestible, right? Easily swallowable, like the best kind of nectar. You know, so the Vedas, they have many different branches, ritualistic performances and everything, but if you, the whole tree of Vedic literature, you get this fruit, which is the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then it's been presented by Shukadev Goswami in this semi-solid form, which is easily swallowable. It's just like nectar. And if one can take that, then he gets the perfection of life. This was approved by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Srimad Bhagavatam is the Amala Purana. It's the spotless Purana. It's perfect. It's our very source of all evidence for Vedic knowledge. So just by hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, one can become perfect. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Okay, so that's it for the Sri Yasha Upanishad. We'll just mark it and keep moving next time.